Welcome to the Edible Valley Podcast. I'm Blaine Prose. Unfortunately, my co-host John is not here tonight. I have returning guest Arzina Hamir of Amara Farm in studio with me. We invite you to join us on our ongoing culinary adventure throughout the Comox Valley, or as we like to call it, the Edible Valley. Welcome, Arzina.
Thanks. Thanks for having me back.
It's nice for you to come in and pinch hit here. And
I'll try. I got big shoes to fill here.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of like, hey, we need somebody to come in. I know. I bet Arzina will come in. That will be awesome.
She'll do it. She does everything.
Yeah. And then I was thinking maybe we could find somebody else to come in, and then it just didn't work out. So anyways, I have some more questions for you.
Yeah.
And but anyways, we'll get to that in a little bit. So You were just telling me you've been trying to plant some garlic.
It's garlic planting time for sure. Normally we plant at the end of September. But with it being so unbearably hot and dry, you know, I was kind of scared that the cloves would just sort of shrivel up and suck, you know, all of the juices would get sucked out.
Right.
So we were waiting for a bit of moisture. And we know we're expanding our garlic planting. So we've got 700 cloves in, but 2,300 to go.
Oh, man.
And yeah, with the downpour now, it's just going to have to wait. So
yeah, I guess you don't want to plant them when the soil's that saturated.
No,
yeah.
No. Yeah, you'll do a bit more damage than good. So
right.
Plus, it's pretty uncomfortable. I mean, we've got good rain gear, but still.
Still, it's not pleasant.
No.
Yes. How was the market this weekend? Did you stay dry?
I did. So second last outdoor market.
Right.
And, you know, it was interesting. I think the rains and, well, it wasn't really rainy. It was just sort of overcast. But the shoppers still came.
Oh,
so,
good.
You know, the folks that really come to the market to buy their produce, they were all there. So I didn't really see a huge drop in sales.
Yep.
Yeah. But I think it was the folks that come to just socialize and drink a cup of coffee. The numbers looked lower, but our sales were still good.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Super. I meant to stop by there. I went out to see Heather McWilliam at Tanitas Farms, and we got chatting, and I just never got out of there. So it's okay, though.
Easy to do.
Yeah. So, yeah, but I did get a bit of food stuff done this weekend. I finished processing the rest of my tomatoes. I just kind of made a tomato juice. I just pureed them and canned them just so they're something's done with them.
Yep. And then you can make sauce or whatever later.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And I had a giant head of cabbage in my fridge I bought from Seaford's Farm a couple weeks ago. So I chopped that up and it's getting turned into sauerkraut.
Yeah. Yes.
And I also made a really nice chicken soup, because I don't eat the noodle part. So, but I put all sorts of yams and parsnips and carrots and chanterelles and dandelion and kale and chickweed and all kinds of weird stuff.
all the stuff with the good micronutrients and
totally. Yeah, I called it my everything up to and including the kitchen sink chicken soup.
I love it.
So yeah, it was really good. It was nice to spend the day just kind of babysitting a pot and letting it do its thing and all that. So
nice.
Yeah, it was good. So that's about that. Last week, as I was rushing out of here to go see a movie, I was talking about it during the podcast, Edible City movie up at North Island College, put on by World Community. And you were there as a kind of a moderator for a little chat afterwards.
Yeah, a discussion. It was really interesting the way that discussion went. And so for folks who haven't seen the movie, it's all about the power of growing food within a city, and how that can help build community, and you know, the different types of things that can spawn off, from employment opportunities to increasing food security for marginalized families, to just overall sense of well-being. You know, just by seeing food grown in sort of arm's reach.
Mm-hmm.
So, afterwards, the conversation was really interesting because, you know, most folks got it, you know, right away. And so my question to the audience was like, well, what would it take to bring that kind of energy to the Comox Valleys? Because, for example, you know, there isn't actually one proper community garden in Courtney, which is really surprising to me for a community this size, that to not have a community garden.
Right.
I mean, there's small kind of school-based ones, but there's not really one that if you live in an apartment or in a townhouse, you don't have a lot of garden space.
Right.
Where can you grow in to grow food?
Right.
And as cities densify and we want that kind of density so that we're not eating up farmland, you got to put aside space so that people can grow food.
Right, yeah. Yeah, definitely. It was amazing, this spaces that the people in that movie were just kind of guerrilla gardening
Ingenious.
And taking over and then sort of asking for permission
after
or forgiveness, I guess, or whatever. But yeah, they just, the one fellow, he just said, I wanted to do something and I just thought, well, I'm just going to do it. So we just started planting some stuff in some unused land that was just overgrown with grass and brush. And
generally that's the way it happens. I mean, in Vancouver, before the Olympics, there were all these kind of little guerrilla gardens kind of popping up everywhere. And it just took one councillor to say, hey, we should put in 2010 new community garden beds for 2010.
Right.
And everyone was like, yeah, let's do it. And then they started freaking out that there's actually not enough city-owned park space to do that.
Oh,
and
sure.
Then they legalized all these guerrilla gardens.
Oh, nice.
And so it kind of legitimized them.
Yeah, right.
So it was like overnight, you know, they went from being sort of quote-unquote bylaw infringers to being totally like, hey, we want more of this. Like, if you want to start a garden, let us know the space and we'll help you. So
awesome.
It's really interesting what a difference that those in power in politics can do to enable something like community gardens.
Yeah. Something that's already happening.
Yeah.
Because if you try to sometimes ask for permission and go through all the channels, like you just get tied up.
You get bogged down.
And it's not something that's going to hurt anybody. So why not just give it a shot?
Absolutely. And then even the developers started getting on board with converting old gas station sites into community gardens, and they got tax benefits.
Right, sure.
So, you know, it's catching on when developers start installing community gardens.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I like the idea that they had it was an old convenience store that had been shut down, and they were trying to create a kind of a co-op system for the neighborhood.
Yeah.
So everybody who kind of, I don't know if you had to put capital in or how it worked, but anyways, you got some sort of a dividend check off of it, and
just for shopping there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were going to bring in fresh food because some of those areas are just food deserts, as they call them, where there's no access to fresh food at all.
Well, I'm kind of looking around this neighborhood at Jet FM.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the general. Indexes, if you have to, anywhere within a 10-minute walk is accessible food.
Right.
But if it's over a mile away, that's not really accessible because you're looking at both, you know, able people, but also seniors, you know, parents with small kids.
Right, sure.
So even in this neighborhood.
Yeah, it is. It's probably, man, probably close to a kilometer down to where Safeway is from here, and more than that to Thrifty's.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's very true. I never thought about that. I always thought that, oh, there's a grocery store just down the road. But, yeah, if you can't get there with a car, it's quite a way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And on a night like tonight, when it's miserable out, you don't want to
pay for a taxi all the way to get some milk.
Yeah. So you go to the corner store and maybe not have the options anyways to buy what you could.
Yeah.
So.
But, you know, the other interesting thing is how growing food in a city also attracts young people into farming because this is usually a way of a very low barrier way of getting into food production because people offer up their front and backyards as well. And that can sometimes really be exciting for young people that they have an opportunity to get into agriculture in a way that doesn't kind of burden them with a huge debt of owning a farm would be.
Yeah, because land isn't cheap.
No.
But if you can use somebody else's land.
Absolutely.
Or next to nothing or a share of your product.
Yeah.
Then it's not coming out of your pocket and not putting you way behind to start out with.
Yeah, it totally makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was looking, driving by the new development at the Thrifties up on Lyric there, and I see them doing their nice landscaping work.
Mm-hmm.
And all I thought to myself was it looks like they're going to have a nice big patch of grass there and they'll probably put in some decorative trees.
Yeah.
Like think about was, why don't they plant fruit trees instead of these other decorative trees?
Absolutely.
They'll still they'll still look very nice. They'll be full of blossoms in the spring and have nice greenery.
Yeah. And if you're worried about the fruit and what happens to it, you call Lush Valley and they'll come and pick it.
Yeah, there won't be a problem getting rid of it.
Nope.
So, yeah, that was a total
epiphany. Let's put it out there. You're putting it out there into the universe. Maybe they haven't decided what trees to plant.
Yeah, you guys should change your minds and plant fruit trees. Grow us more food. You have lots of space.
Again, and all that takes is sometimes just one or two people in the right position to say, hey, why don't we do that?
Yeah.
There's no need to that we have to plant just trees that lose their leaves and decorative only.
Yeah.
Let's have a purpose.
Let's make some food and then put a few little beds on that lawn and grow some carrots or kales or something. Kale's quite pretty.
It is.
You can make some nice big beds of that.
It is a purple kale. Yeah.
Speaking of kale, you had a lady come to town, correct? I know you talked about it when you were here before, and I'm gapping on what her name is.
Her name is Sharon Hanna, and she's the author of The Book of Kale. So she came for a book signing and a reading at Comox Library.
Mm-hmm.
And then she came the next day to the Comox Valley Farmers Market and just did a demo of how to prepare kale really easily. I mean, she just sautéed some kale with one dish she did with apples and leeks. And, I mean, people were just lined up. And then the second dish, I think, was mushrooms and, again, some more leeks. Really simple.
Mm-hmm.
And I swear every vendor in the market ran out of kale that week.
Oh, yeah. I bet.
And I even brought extra, knowing that this was going to happen, that she was going to be promoting kale and we'd have a little bit extra sales. But holy smokes. The impact was immediate. Suddenly people knew what to do with it.
Sweet. And, that's awesome. Yeah.
And she herself sold out. I told her, bring 30 books.
Yeah.
And she didn't believe me. She brought 15.
Mm.
She sold out so quickly.
Right.
And she's now kind of chomping at the bit to come back. Yeah.
So we'll
try and figure out a way to bring her back. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we'll get her in here to have a talk with us about it.
Yeah, she's hilarious.
Yeah, so, that'd be great.
Very funny sense of humor. So.
Yeah. Like I said with my soup, I threw some kale in there. I just chopped it up, threw it in the rest of everything else I was sautéing up beforehand. It's a really simple, easy thing to use.
Yeah. And if you can't figure it out, the stall next to me at the market is Anne from Simply Delectable, and she does the most amazing kale chips.
Mm, yeah, sure.
And my kids eat that like popcorn.
Yeah.
And, within the space of 15 minutes, they've probably eaten about 4 heads of kale.
Yeah.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm also a big proponent of Google. Because if you don't know what to do with something, Google it. I constantly do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like 2 or 3 ingredients, what you got, and just see what happens.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. Yeah.
Hi.
Recipes you can find are amazing.
Yeah. I'm totally not a very creative cook. I like to do it, but I'm not creative about pairing things. And so I just throw a bunch of stuff together like the soup, or I got to find a recipe so I can see what goes well together.
Yeah.
Most of the time I'm just throwing a bunch of stuff in a pan and hoping it turns out. It usually does.
Yeah.
Put enough salt on anything, it pretty much tastes good.
Well, the nice thing about buying local, buying kales and stuff like that is, the flavor is so great.
Mm-hmm.
And when you buy fresh, that's half the battle right there. All your food tastes great. Like you said, even if you sautéed it with just some salt, it already tastes amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, John did that for us. I think it was last week he did some Swiss chard.
Mm.
And pretty much all he did was saute it, add a little salt to it, maybe some butter. It was great. So good.
It's simple, right?
Very simple.
Yeah.
Anybody can do it.
Anybody. Yes. So, we need to all be eating more kale and chard.
Yeah.
Sure.
You see some big leafy greens, take it, saute it, eat it. It's great.
Yeah.
So anyways, on that note, I've kind of wanted to ask you about winter gardening today because it's kind of that season of transition away from the summer vegetables to more, hardier varieties of different things that'll grow over the winter. So I'm not familiar with, I'm familiar with the concept, but I've never really done any winter gardening.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, what do you need to do?
So the one thing that you have to keep in mind for growing food through the winter here in the Comox Valley is that it's not generally the cold that kills the plants, it's the excess water.
Right.
So growing food through the 12 months of the year is absolutely doable here.
Mm-hmm.
And we all need to do more for sure. But the one thing you have to keep in mind is you do need to raise your soil a bit. I mean, it doesn't have to be a formal raised bed with wood sides or anything. You
right.
can just mound it. So
oh, okay.
4 to 6 inches so that you've got a pathway and a mound so that the water can drain.
Okay, sure.
Because so many of the winter vegetables, I mean, they can grow in Alberta cold.
Right.
But if they sit in water, their roots will rot, and that's usually what does them in.
Okay.
So that's the first one.
Yeah.
The second one is that, you know, right now in October, there's not a lot that you can start from seed.
Right.
What you can start from seed is things like radishes,
because mm-hmm.
they're done in 30 days.
Okay.
It's still pretty mild, so you could still get away with some mustard greens. So if you like those like nice horseradishy flavored greens like giant red or those would can also do, and you could harvest them as baby greens.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have to be a full size on mustard green. But the majority of the planning for fall and winter gardening happens in the summer.
Right.
So we start seeding. I mean, we're practically seeding all the time, but particularly in July and August, we're starting kale. For
mm-hmm.
sure, because if you try and plant kale now from seed, you're going to get this little teeny thing. And kind of around the end of this week, around October 13th,
mm-hmm.
is when in North America, we get the day length starts to really lower.
Right.
And combined with a cooler soil temperature, plants don't grow anymore. But they sit, and
mm-hmm.
you can harvest them whenever you want.
Oh, okay. I see.
So you kind of have to grow them to full size by about this week.
Okay.
For the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of want to work backwards from middle of October. And, you know, if something is 50 days or 60 days to maturity, that's when you were supposed to plant them, you know,
right.
a little while ago. So,
okay.
You know, try it out right now. Plant some garlic for sure.
Yeah.
Plant some radishes. See how they do. Radishes in the fall are so sweet and so juicy. They
mm-hmm.
don't have as much of that hot bite
oh, really?
That they have in the spring.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
Because it's really, it's heat that gets them to be a little bit spicy.
Right.
And the lack of moisture.
Okay.
But now we'll have moisture up the yin-yang.
We're
and
not
they'll
no
be
worry.
Crunchy and they won't be as wasabi kind of tasty.
Okay.
And then in the beginning of November, I plant fava beans, or also known as broad beans.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great protein source that's vegetarian. And if you plant it in November, you'll be eating fava beans by June.
Oh, okay.
So, whereas spring-planted favas are not usually ready until about July, August time.
Okay, yeah.
And they get hit by an aphid.
So mm-hmm.
I really like doing the fall planting.
Do they germinate over the winter?
Yeah.
Oh, they
at
do.
Christmas time, you'll see these little green things coming out of the ground. They're so cute. And they'll stay tiny, tiny like that until about mid-February. And then again, you know, it's amazing. The plants know the combination of day length starts to increase and
mm-hmm.
the soil temperature starts to rise. They just shoot out of the ground.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, garlic and favas are usually the first things out of the ground.
Yeah.
So, you know, if that really kind of hooks you into growing food through the wintertime, you know, next year is when you really want to start getting serious. So, you know, look at the seed catalogs, see what you like.
Mm-hmm.
So on our farm, what I really like eating a lot of and growing myself is bok choy.
Mm-hmm.
So both baby bok choy, Shanghai bok choy, and the full-on, full-size bok choy.
Mm-hmm.
I've got four different kinds. And so I seeded all of those at the end of August. So they're still small seedlings,
mm-hmm.
Still trying to transplant them in the ground because we had that really unusual hot weather.
Yeah.
But, you know, now the transplanting's going out, and so they'll start. They're good. Now, on my farm, I also do have greenhouses.
Right.
So they're not heated. They're just what are called hoop houses.
Mm-hmm.
And that really helps to extend the season incredibly, at least another 4, if not 6 weeks.
Okay.
So it can make a huge difference.
So it can just keep the frost away sort of
thing? It does. And it raises the soil temperature enough that the plants don't stop growing.
Right.
So even though the day length is still, nothing you can do about that. Well, you could add lights if you wanted to, but that's going to be a pretty big expense.
A lot of energy inputs.
Yeah. But the plastic just traps heat enough that even on a day like this, it's still warmer in the hoop house, and the soil still warmer.
Yeah. My tomato plants that I had in the front yard in my little box,
are they gone?
They're gone now.
Ah,
but yeah. I just cut them down last week because I harvested all the fruit off them. But from probably middle of, right when we got that little bit of a frost kind of in September, so I took some poly and I just threw it over top of them. nothing pretty, nothing special, but it kept them alive.
Absolutely.
And it kept that fruit there, and it allowed, actually the fruit started ripening better once I got that plastic on it.
It's amazing.
So yeah,
I know
they did really
plastic
well.
Is sort of oil derived, but it's the little bit that helps to make a huge difference. Both in the fall and then in the spring, if you want to try and get on your garden earlier.
Sure.
Keeps the rain off, and it helps your soil dry out earlier, and then you can get planting way earlier.
Right. Yeah, the cloches, they're called.
Yeah.
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 So little handy little devices
it
to build.
Sure does help.
Yeah.
And, having especially UV treated like a the proper greenhouse plastic, because you can probably find builder's plastic, but it's not UV treated, it will maybe last you 1 year,
right?
And it starts to break up and become all brittle and stuff.
Good
whereas
point.
The greenhouse poly, it's a little bit more expensive, but it will last you at least 6 years, if not more.
Right. Okay. That's a good point. Yeah, because that's what I was using, was just regular poly that I got from a site.
Yep.
And I thought, oh, this will be great.
You've got good access to sites like that.
Yes. So, but anyways, it served its purpose, but I thought maybe I would build a greenhouse out of that stuff, but maybe I will reconsider.
Well, just have a look and see what the quality is, because it does deteriorate if it's not UV treated.
Right.
Yeah,
if it's meant to be buried behind drywall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it doesn't really need any special treatments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, getting back to the winter gardening, it does have to do with timing. Getting your plants started so that they're mature by the time mid-October hits.
Mm-hmm.
And then also changing over to, so going away from the tomatoes and peppers and the heat-loving crops to the more greens. A lot of the Asian greens do really well in our climate. So look at some of those. Salad greens again. Everything that you pretty much planted in spring, you can grow in the fall again. So I've got snap peas that are almost ready to...
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
And those were planted early August.
Okay.
So they're almost done. And spinach and lettuce, all of those things that you think of as early spring stuff can also grow really well in the fall.
Hmm. Awesome.
And, yeah.
Now, those peas and things, are you sowing those direct or are you starting them?
Peas I don't, just because I have 50 feet of them.
Right.
And to transplant 50 feet of peas is a tough.
It's a lot of work. Sure.
But everything else, pretty much, I did start in trays.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you'll notice if you're getting into this is direct seeding little tiny seeds in August when it's hot and dry is really tough. So you got to bring back all your seed starting stuff that you had early on.
Right.
Put it back on your kitchen counter and away you go.
Yeah. That's what my problem was, because I direct sowed lots of different things this year and I just had no success with germination.
Oh gosh, keeping stuff. This was a bad year for that. Keeping it moist just to the point of germination was really tough.
Yeah. I never get frustrated because I'm very experimental and I don't really have too much concern about it. But I just thought, no, this is silly. I just can't get anything to grow. And even stuff I was trying to start in little pots on my kitchen table, I wasn't keeping it watered enough, so it just nothing
it
happened.
Dries out. Yeah.
So, kind of a distracted gardener. I need easy things, or more. I just need to concentrate more.
Or you just need
more.
The incentive of needing to require. This isn't going to make your money. This is what you need all of. So suddenly you pay a lot of attention to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I always have goals of being a better gardener, but sometimes most of the time doesn't work out, but I usually have good success with carrots. They grow really well for me.
And that's not easy,
Yeah.
Growing good carrots is
tough. Yeah, I've
got
some pretty good crop this year.
So you got some nice soil then.
Yeah. Yeah, the one garden bed's really healthy.
Awesome.
I threw my coffee grounds in it. I think that really helps.
Perfect.
I think
they
like the caffeine.
That, and it'll also help to keep away carrot rust fly a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because the coffee smell distracts the fly a bit.
Oh, nice. So that's good.
Fresh grounds are always good on carrots. Yeah.
Now, we talked a little bit about hoop houses and cloches. What about mulching and like straw and things like that? Does that help? Or
it generally helps to keep the weeds down.
Okay.
Here we don't really have hard frosts and really, really cold. I'm comparing us now to eastern Canada where, minus 20 is the norm and it's kind of fluctuating up and down between that.
Yeah.
So where mulching comes in handy is, for instance, in garlic, in a crop that's going to be planted in October but not harvested until June, July.
Mm-hmm.
So it's there in the ground for 9 months, and it doesn't like competing with weeds very well. So a mulch will really help to keep, whatever from sprouting. So leaves, grass clippings, whatever you got, put it down, and that'll help to keep, the weeds from coming up.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got something like carrots or beets that are still in the ground and still okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the great thing about this weather. The ground doesn't really freeze.
Right.
So if we do get a cold snap, or it looks like we're getting a cold snap, you can put some mulch down. The tops might die down, but then, the roots are all fine. And
right.
You just dig them up whenever you want.
As needed, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was wishing my parsnips germinated, but they really, I put lots of them in and nothing happened.
And parsnips are notoriously hard to germinate.
Oh, are they?
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I shouldn't feel too bad.
No.
Plus, I have a real snail problem at my place. So I've been taking all my eggshells and crushing them up and just throwing them everywhere, hoping that'll help.
It does for a bit, and then it softens up. So you don't have a snail problem. You have a duck deficiency. So
I need to get some ducks.
I think I might get into that rent a duck business. Someone mentioned that to me, or rent a goat or something.
Yeah, I just take them and throw them up on the road.
Yeah,
get out of my yard.
Yes.
Rotten. I don't have slugs, but the snails are just unreal. So I don't know what's going on. Do you normally need to do any special amendments to the soil for winter? Or?
Well, I mean, if you've especially grown something that's a heavy feeder, like tomatoes or broccoli, cabbage, those tend to suck up a lot of nutrients from the soil. So I do like to put down some fertilizer, but back in August time, you wouldn't want to put down anything fresh or uncomposted right now, because it's going to stimulate very tender growth, like a lot of leaf growth, and we will get hard frost soon, and it'll wipe out all of that really fresh growth.
Right.
So amending the soil is it's important, but it needs to be done at the right time. So not right now, but one thing you should do, especially anywhere where you're not going to grow potatoes, is to lime your soil.
Okay.
So, the rains that we get wash out pretty much all the calcium and the magnesium in the soil.
Right.
So you do need to, kind of on an annual basis, put lime down just to sweeten the soil, bring the acidity back to a little bit more, less acidic.
Mm-hmm.
Because the good range for acidity in soils is 5.5 to 6.5 pH, and our soils tend to be quite acidic. So
because of all the rain,
and just the type of trees that are in this area,
right?
The soil types is generally acidic, so you do want to add some lime.
Okay,
and it takes a while. People don't realize that if you just put down lime and it rains in, it takes months for lime to work.
Okay.
So now is fall is a really good lime time.
Cool. All right. And what about snow? Is that really a problem with winter plants?
Most of the plants that you're going to be growing, if it's stuff like kale or cabbage or the root veggies, snow is actually an insulator. So it'll keep them nice and warm.
Okay.
So I don't know if you remember the snow we had in 2000, back in 2008 when we had that snow for a month.
Yes, I remember that very well.
I had little baby arugula in my garden.
Yeah.
And, the snow came and it stayed and it stayed. And I was like, oh, it's just toast. But it melted, and there they were.
Oh,
just
wow.
Fine. It's like, yes, arugula in January. Yeah. So it can be actually not a bad thing. It's actually, you know, like I said, it's an insulator. It's when you have bare ground and you get frost and thaw and frost and thaw. That's usually what can damage, like you got, you know, icicles forming in the soil that can kind of cut up roots.
Oh, yeah.
So if it looks like we are going to have a really cold, cold winter, then absolutely mulching will help to sort of insulate the soil from against that sort of freezing thawing cycle that happens. Yeah.
Cool. And now, what do you think is going to be available? Like, what is AmeriFarm going to have available, and anybody else going to have available, you think, around the valley this winter?
Well, you know, we'll still have a little bit of, I mean, garlic sales are actually really picking up right now.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. People are putting in garlic for sure. So, you know, we're selling 20, 30 bulbs at a time.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have a little bit of that left. We have beets left and leeks. I think there still will be root crops.
Mm-hmm.
So beets, carrots, hopefully more parsnips. We'll certainly have a lot of kale because not only is our spring kale still there, but our summer planted, like the July stuff I seeded, is now finally coming into a good enough size that we can start to harvest.
Mm-hmm.
So root crops and the winter veggies, I'm hoping will keep us through. Now I'm going to be planting my remaining bok choys. Our tomatillos are actually still producing.
Oh,
so
really? Yeah.
Trying to pick them, and I'm kind of saying, oh, should I just rip them out now? And because I kind of need that space in the greenhouse to put the winter greens. So yeah, tough call is going to have to be made soon.
Yeah.
But that greenhouse will help us have greens, you know, I'm hoping all winter long.
Right.
So fingers crossed, as long as the slugs don't find it before I do.
Right.
Yeah.
Get the ducks in there.
Because we do have a duck deficiency on our farm too.
Yeah.
we don't have a waiting pool or any kind of pond yet for them. So we've been delaying getting the ducks, but
right.
Yeah, we need them.
Yeah. Neil was talking about maybe turning your old house into a pond.
Well, yeah. When we move our old house
and
it gets turned into a pack house, I mean, we just thought, hey, there's going to be this hole. And instead of paying to fill it, why don't we just turn it into a pond and it would be perfect?
Yeah, so, that would be great.
Yeah. Stay tuned.
I thought it was a cool idea.
Yeah. I think that's like kind of building on permaculture. Like use what you got and why mess with what's already there and use that resource. Yeah. And
solve
I like the idea of not paying to fill a hole.
Yeah, for sure. Wonderful. Okay. So I think that's a pretty good primer for anybody that wants to start doing a little winter gardening.
Yeah.
Although it might be a little late for starting a lot of things now if you haven't already done so, but
Come and see me if you need seedlings.
Right. Yeah. You have seedlings at the market and at the farm. I'm going to go get some radish seeds, I think. I want to try that because I got some space. So actually, I bought a pepper plant back in, I don't know, probably early July or late June or something like that. And it already had a couple peppers on it, so I put it on my deck with all my other herb plants that I bought the same day, and it did its thing, and then it just kind of sat there for the summer, and then kind of the end of August it started getting a couple more blossoms on it, and then it started to grow fruit. So I've moved it in the house. I have a really nice southern exposure window in my living room, so it's sitting there on the table, and it's very, very happy. I'm looking forward to that producing a few more things for me.
Yeah, I think people don't realize actually that peppers, tomatoes, eggplant are actually perennials in their native.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I had no idea.
They will keep on growing and producing and flowering until basically frost kills them.
Right.
But, you know, in their native Central America, they don't die like
that.
Oh,
wow.
They just kind of keep, well, I guess, you know, from drought they would die.
Right.
But it's not, we grow them just as annuals because that's all, it doesn't pay to heat a greenhouse and stuff through the winter.
Right.
Here. Yeah.
Well, I'll be interested to see how this thing does.
Yeah. Keep an eye out for aphids, can sometimes be a problem.
Yeah.
And sucking insects when you bring a plant in. So just watch out for that. And soap spray usually does a good job.
Okay. Yeah. Good. Well, thank you for the the word primer.
Mm, you're welcome. And I hope to see more. We need more people growing food in the winter here.
Yeah, totally. I agree. And now I've learned a few things, so hopefully I'll have a little more success.
Yeah.
Not even just right now, but next spring too, when I go to put some stuff in the ground.
Absolutely. So. And, you know, I think the more people I talk to, people really are interested in winter gardening. So look out next year for some winter gardening classes, but in July and August when it's the time to do it. So don't be offended when you see winter gardening in July and August. That is the time when you got to do it.
Right, so, yes. Yeah. It's a little bit of a misnomer, but that's just how it goes. Very good, Arzina. Well, thank you for doing that for
us.
You're welcome. So upcoming events, we've touched on most of these. International Chef's Day is October 20th. So if you're out at a restaurant on the 20th, you know, maybe send a little note to your chef or go poke your head in the kitchen and say thank you. On October 23rd, another World Community event, Sustaining Farms, The Power of Community. Cuban Mavis Dora Alvarez is an agricultural engineer and educator who consults with Cuban family farms and co-ops. So that'll be kind of an interesting talk. Yeah.
So looking forward to that.
So I originally thought this was a film, but he's actually coming to speak. So that'll be at the theater at North Island College.
At the Stanhagen. Yeah.
Yes. And October 25th, the Top 40 Under 40 Gala Awards and Dance at Crown Isle. Also on the 25th is the Childhaven fundraiser. For more information, childhaven.ca. North Island Junior Chef Competition, November 19th. Chef Aaron Rail's One Big Table event is at Avenue Bistro on October 29th. Crown Isle's 11th Annual Wine Fest, November 3rd. And don't forget to nominate your local food hero with the Facebook and Twitter contest from Eat Drink Comox Valley and Beyond. And also, we've just had a few new followers to the Comox Valley $100 Challenge. So I think that's still going well.
Nice.
It's kind of slowed down a bit now that it's not crazy, crazy summer season for people out shopping. But
people are
still
doing
it.
But now's still a good time to support your local farmers.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
It's a good time all year round.
Yes.
And so anyways, if you're interested in the Comox Valley $100 Challenge, check it out on Facebook and like it, and keep track of your local spending, and go see Arzina and buy some kale.
Thanks. Thanks for the kale plug.
Yeah. No worries. So thanks for listening to the Edible Valley Podcast. We gratefully accept donations to help with our operating costs of the podcast or local ingredients to create new dishes in the Edible Valley Test Kitchen. Check out our website, ediblevalley.com. Like us on Facebook and follow our Twitter feed at Edible Valley. Email us with your comments or guests you'd like us to have on the show, ediblevalley@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and remember, keep it local.